I'm Wendell. I'm living love by Jesus. Have my good days, have my not so good days, but I'm proud to every day, there's this bedrock security and realization that I am loved by my God. So it makes it okay. It's I can survive. I can do it. And to have nights like tonight with you all here, it's Loretta came in, and we're on a family thread. Bless our hearts, our family so blessed. We're on a family thread with our family, and so we're talking about the stuff that's going down, and then you all come in. It's like, yes, this is my honest family. This is my authentic family. This is my family who loves me the way I am, warts and all, and this is good. This is good. So thank you so much for being my family. Thank you, thank you, thank you. You know my stuff. It's spiritual, emotional abuse, addiction to food, work, and control, and I've had issues with porn and alcohol and rage and panic and depression, and now I'm kind of finding out what it means to get old. You got a ways to go, dude. Yeah, you got a ways to go. And I know there are others here who are going down a path that I'm not there yet as well, so you're ahead of me. But anyway, for those of us who are aging, there's liabilities to it. Your body won't do what you want it to. You can't remember things like you used to. You want to sleep more than you used to. You hurt more than you used to. All that good stuff, and that they may be the liabilities. But the good part of it is you know things more deeply than you've ever known them. You treasure more deeply than you've ever treasured them. And you cry more than you used to. I didn't used to cry this bad, but you cry more than you used to. There you go. That's it. But, I mean, to be married to a woman for over 30 years and think I love her more now than I did when we got married. And, you know, you hear tales of things like this and you think, yeah, right. No, it's true. It just gets sweeter and deeper as time goes on. So anyway, that's my story. If you're following along in the workbook, we're lesson session 5, I think. Now it's on triangulation, and a lot of the stuff that we've dealt with, it's like, what? These are all new terms. We talked about codependency. We talked about the toxic dance, which you've talked about before. We've talked about codependency. We've talked about gaslighting. We've talked about passive aggression. And now we're talking about triangulation. And most of these terms, when I first got in recovery, were brand new to me. I had no idea what they meant. And I kind of thought I knew what they meant, so I put them into a workbook that we could use as an entire church. And then we come here and we have discussions, and I'm thinking, I didn't know anything about that. And then we meet in our small groups, and I'm thinking, now I really know I didn't know anything about it. So I have written all kinds of notes, and so I'm sure that this triangulation thing, we're not going to have a discussion tonight. I want to bring a few thoughts. But when I get in my groups this week, I have a Wednesday night and a Thursday night group, I'm going to take notes furiously because everybody in the room is going to teach me. We can't give away anything. But there's one group I'm in that John's in and Rick's in, and we met on Wednesday. And there's a guy in there. I don't want to say too much because I don't want to give away who it is because it's confidential. But put it this way, Rick and I are the same age. He could be our son. He took us to school. He took us to freaking school. And I just sat there and wrote, and I thought, we learn from everybody. We learn. If you're open and you're honest, you learn from everybody. So this triangulation thing should be about the same thing. So anyway, triangulation is, and in the workbook, it's described this way. I think that little Betty Bop over there is the cutest little thing I've ever seen. And I'm like 6, 7 years old. I ain't going to go talk to her. There ain't no way. I cannot get up because she may reject me. She may not want to talk to me. She may not think I'm cool. She may think that my pants don't match my shirt or something. I'm not going to talk to Betty Bop over there. I'm not going to do it. But I can get Billy to do it. So I get Billy to go and talk to her. Go see if she kind of likes me and go see if she, you know, might sit by me in lunchroom and go see if, you know, if I give her a Twinkie, will she take it? You know, whatever it might be. And so he goes over there and he kind of, you know, does my groundwork for me. And then he comes back and he reports back. And then I'm thinking, oh boy, is that enough to go on? I'm not sure. So I send him back for another mission. And so it's one, two, three. It's a triangle. It's three people. I should have had the nerve and the backbone or whatever and the gumption to go talk to her, but I didn't. So I send a third person. That's a funny little silly example. That's a cute one. That's one that's harmless and nobody, you know, there were no people wounded in this scenario. When it comes to families, when it comes to relationships, when it comes to where you work, when it comes to siblings, when it comes to marriages, when it comes to all different things, triangulation can become so deadly. Let's get into a real scenario. So mom and dad have a rocky marriage up until the kids are, say, 8-10 years old. Got two kids, got a little boy, a little girl. I'm just making this up on the fly. So they got a little 10-year-old boy, a little 8-year-old girl, and all of a sudden mom and dad decide they're going to get a divorce. And so it's not a pretty thing. It's not one of those amicable divorces. It's one of those bitter ones, one of those bad ones. And so they split up, and now they have joint custody of these two little kids. And so when mom's got the two little kids, she is feeding them, nurturing them, coddling them, helping them and everything. And then right before they go to spend time with dad, she gives them some marching orders. She gives them an assignment. Now, when you go be with your dad, I want you to tell him that this is the way I feel. And I want you to tell dad that if he doesn't start doing this, that I'm going to do that. And I want you to know that I love you much better than your dad does. Thanks, Mom. So then they go to dad's house, and dad does, you know, what dads do. He takes them to a ball game, takes them to a movie, goes out and buys some of their favorite toys and takes them to Chuck E. Cheese or whatever, you know, and they have a good time. And so it's time to go back to mom. And so he says, of course, they report to him what mom said to report. So it's time to go back. So he sends them with his version of an assignment. You tell mom that I don't care what she said, and I'm going to keep doing whatever I'm doing, and that if she wants to do something about it, well, she can call the lawyer or whatever. So little kids, 8 and 10 years old, have to go back, you know, very dutifully have to go back and report to mom. And this goes back and forth, back and forth. And they grow up with this. I mean, these are two, just put, and you may have been in that situation. Put yourself in that situation and think about, I'm the little kid here who loves both of these adults. And they've always been my heroes. They've always been my providers. They've always given, made me feel secure, and now I'm caught in the middle, and I'm supposed to tell each one how much the other one hates them, and how much they want to manipulate them, and how much they want to dominate them, or whatever, what they want to get out of them. That's triangulation. When you're a third party in a two-party dispute, or a two-party tug-of-war, or a two-party competition, or whatever it might be, that's triangulation. And I'm sure that in a room this big, we could come up with a dozen other scenarios that are quite different from the two I've given you. One is silly and one is very real. But you get them in business, you get them, like if you're a superior at business and you're real good at everything except conflict resolution. So you get somebody else to do your dirty work for you. We'll play good boss, bad boss, and you're the bad boss. So you have to go take care of that because I don't have enough nerve to sit down eyeball to eyeball with so-and-so and tell them what they need to hear. So you do it that way. You get where we're going here. It's where I have an issue with somebody or they have an issue with me. Maybe it's just a question. Maybe it's not a conflict. It might just be a question. But we don't trust the bridge between us to be strong enough for us to talk eyeball to eyeball, so we take a detour around that bridge and use somebody else. Well, there's two things I want to go off from here, and I'm not going to take a long time tonight. So one thing is you have to ask yourself, in all these things we've talked about for the past several Sunday nights, we've talked about codependency, we talked about gaslighting, we've talked about passive aggression, we've talked about all these things, and the one thing that I want to ask is, If my relationship with the people who I claim to be close to in my life is so precarious and so weak that I can't just make my yes be yes and my no, no, I can't just have a simple, honest, authentic conversation with them, how strong is the bridge between us? What kind of relationship do we, oh, I could never say that to my dad, or I could never say that to my mom. You've spent your whole life with them. You should have an unbreakable bridge with them. And yet we say, oh, I could never say that to him. Our husbands and wives, we've been married 30, 40, 50 years, whatever. Oh, I could never go there with them. I'll need to get somebody else in here. What kind of bridge do you have? Friendship, dating, whatever it is. How strong is that bridge when we can't even dare put a foot or two on it and at least say, can we talk about this? You know, maybe not go across the bridge with a big agenda, but just inch out onto the bridge and say, can we meet halfway and just start a conversation? Is that even possible? That's one thing I want to say. Here's the other thing, and then we'll close. I don't have a whole lot to say tonight. But this is something I didn't include in the workbook. At least I didn't expand on it. And it's something that we really need to understand in recovery. There is an enormous difference. They're not even the same species. There's an enormous difference between peacekeeping and peacemaking. Jesus said, blessed are the peacemakers, not the peacekeepers. Okay, so let's, and I've written some of this in my material before, so it may be old to you, and I apologize if you've heard it before. Think about the UN troops with their nice baby blue helmets. So they go into a war-torn place on the planet where two tribes are fighting or two cities are fighting or there's a boundary dispute or whatever it is. And they go in here and they broker some sort of a short-term peace. And so this side A and side B are seething with anger. They're loading their magazines to stuff into their guns. They're stockpiling weapons, they're planning and scheming what they're going to do, but they're not fighting because there's the little men in the blue hats that are between them that are keeping them from fighting. They're keeping the peace, but they're not making any peace. This side hates this side, who hates this side, just as much as before the blue hats showed up. So you get that? There's anger. These guys are just in the middle, keeping the anger away from itself, keeping it from piling up and killing itself. So they're just keeping peace. They're not making peace. A lot of people who say, well, I'm a peacemaker, if you really dig down and watch them and observe them, they're not making peace. They're just keeping peace. They're deflecting. They're distracting people. You know, they're like, here, let's go do this real quick. You don't want to say that to them. Let's go do this real quick. Or they'll jump in a conversation and bring in an additional agenda really quick to deflect. No, we don't want to go down that path. Let's talk about this over here. You like candy, don't you? You know, let's talk about candy for a while. You know, where are you going to eat? Where are you going to eat after you leave here? You know, anything to, what about that ball game last night? Man, that was anything to deflect attention from, that's peacekeeping. It's not peacemaking. It is artificial and it's short-lived. Sometimes that's all you got. Let's just face it. Sometimes to say keep people out of jail, you need just to keep the peace. So in cases like that, yeah, put on your blue hat and get in between them and keep the peace. But long-term in a family, in long-term relationships, long-term work relationship, then the family, whatever, if that becomes the norm, that we're just keeping peace, and you've got, because you see where the triangulation comes in, you find yourself in the middle of two feuding people. So you're trying to keep the peace all the time. You're seeing that person A is in the room doing this, and person B is about to show up. You jump out in the parking lot really, really quick. Oh, you don't want to go in there right now. I just remember we need to go on an errand. You're jumping in there, you're deflecting. You're doing it with conversations, you're doing it with agendas, you're doing it all kind of ways to just try to keep these two people from fighting. And you're the third person. You're the you're the unneeded part of the triangle. Do you see what I'm saying? It's exhausting. If you've been in it, you know it's just like, oh my gracious. This is exhausting to live trying to keep these two people apart, trying to keep them civil toward each other. It's exhausting. That is peacekeeping. That is not peacemaking. Peacemaking probably doesn't happen with two family members and a third family member. Peacemaking probably happens with two feuding family members and then a third anonymous type person or an outsider coming in. My father, you know, I've shared with you my issues with him, but the good side of what I gleaned from my dad far outweighs the bad stuff that happened to me. Now that I've forgiven him of that and reconciled, I'm seeing this humongous volume of stuff that my dad taught me through the years. And really, it's huge. When I do my workbooks now, this is a little rabbit trail here. Ron, give me a rabbit trail. He calls me, I'm a rabbit trail. When I do my workbooks now that ask a question, you know, name the hard parts growing up in the and then name the good parts. It used to be the hard parts just was full, and the good parts was like, I really don't know what to say. And now, when I write about my dad, I'll write a few of the hard parts, and then the good parts just are full. So that's the fruit of recovery. It really is the fruit of recovery. But anyway, so what I'm saying about my dad is, what am I saying about my dad? Where was I? I learned good things, but it was a thought before that. It'll come to me. I remember what he said. He said, don't ever, because he knew I was going to be a pastor, and he knew I was going to do a lot of pastoral counseling. And he said, don't ever try to counsel a family member. Don't try to counsel your wife. If you're a woman, don't try to counsel your husband. You can encourage, you can nurture, you can, in a sense, mentor some, but you can't counsel like a therapist would your spouse or a child or your parent or whatever. So if you're stuck in a triangle with two family members, you're not going to be the one who becomes the peacemaker there. I'm going to let that settle in some. It's not going to work. It's not going to work. You're too involved. You've got too much invested there. They're both looking at you saying, you are going to take my side, right? You're part of the family. You know who you really love. You know who you've watched this for a long time. You really know who's right here, don't you? Come on. You can't get away from that as a family member. So if you're going to be a peacemaker, you'll probably find yourself being a peacemaker in somebody else's situation, not in your own. This didn't go over well. I'm looking around, everybody's like, what? You took us to this place and you dropped that on us? It's true. It's just plain true. So you have to just come to the place to say, we have a God who loves this family, my family. I have a God who loves my family more than I do. Settle in on that and say, if that's the case, then we also have a God who has other people waiting in the wings who can step into that situation and do what I can't do. And we're like, no, but I've got to fix this. They don't love them as much as I do. They may not, but God loves them more. And he's got people who can step in that gap and help make peace instead of just keep peace. What does it look like to make peace? If you're called upon to be a peacemaker, because you're going to be pulled into some of these triangles, but they won't be family triangles, and they won't be these dysfunctional, volatile triangles. You'll be called in more as an objective third party. Everybody get what I'm saying by that? You don't have a lot of emotions invested there. You're more of an objective third party. You're the professional. Does that make us feel better? I want to see some smiles. Oh, you got masks on. Okay. That's why I'm not seeing smiles. So what does it look like to help make peace? I think the first thing that we do is you have to look at both parties and say, do you even want to talk? Is there a willingness here to open a dialogue? If there is a willingness, then you can say, okay, are you willing to listen? Are you willing to listen to the other person's viewpoint. And if you're caught in the middle of this, you almost, not in every case, but you almost have to run it like we do our small groups and say, okay, you cut 3 to 5, share your heart. Okay, now you have to be quiet. You have 3 to 5 to share your heart. And you get them to respect the time, the feelings, the story of the other person. And you get them telling their story. Why do you feel this way? People think that, and you do, you really do need a degree to be a licensed counselor. I'm not saying you don't. But you can help a lot of people by just using a few tricks, a few techniques. And one is, if you find yourself in a situation like this, is to, and you're going to laugh, and you can, I don't care if you do, but you look at this, okay, they've talked, now you look at this one and you say, so how do you feel about what they just said? How many have heard of therapists, you know, so how do you feel about what they said? So that's a good question to ask on both sides. How do you feel about, how does that make you feel? And then when they start to express their feelings, then you ask the question, hey, can you figure out why you feel that way? Have you ever stopped to ask yourself why you feel that way? And here's the trick, and I'll close on this. Here's the trick. If they're angry at that other person and you say, why are you angry? Inevitably, they're going to say it's their fault. It's the other person's fault that I'm angry. And the trick is to get them to see, okay, so 10 other people saw what they just did and they're not angry. Why are you angry about this? Do you get the difference? You get the difference? Is try to get them to ask the question, why did that trip my trigger? It really didn't trigger anybody else's trigger. What is it about me that made me get angry at them? Everybody following what I'm saying? That is a trick to get them to be able to own. Oh, it's not just them. There's something inside me that's reacting to that. So, okay, that's not much of an ending, but that's the ending.